Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 12 of the Parenting Aces podcast, a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and this week's guest comes to us from the UK, from across the pond. Fabian Spies is with Minerva Virtual Academy, an online learning environment that is based in the UK, but open to students around the world and certainly appropriate for those of you in the US and elsewhere. So I'm super excited for you to hear from Fabian about his experience growing up as an athlete and also what Minerva has to offer, how it's different from other virtual or online schools that you may have heard of, and why you should give it a closer look. Before I bring Fabian on, a quick reminder that if you haven't already, we would love to have you join us as a premium member of Parenting Aces. Just go to parentingaces.com, click on the join link, and you will get a link to go to the pages that you need to sign up and take advantage of all that we have to offer, including our one-on-one consulting sessions. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Fabian Spies.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fabian, welcome to the Parenting Aces podcast. It is a pleasure to have you from across the pond. And with Wimbledon going on right now, kind of apropos that we're speaking this week.
Yeah. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure. And obviously with Wimbledon going on at the moment, it's absolutely the right time, I think, to have this conversation. I've been following it really closely. And oh, my God, I love Wimbledon. It's so good, isn't it?
It's so good. And I am dying to come in person. I have not yet made the trip, but it is definitely on my bucket list and something I hope to tick off very soon. But I have to just mention, because as we were getting ready to record this morning, Chris Eubanks beat Steph Tsitsipas to earn a spot in the quarterfinals. So go U.S. tennis, go U.S. college tennis, and congratulations to Chris and his team. You and I were just chatting about Chris's kind of journey, and it's very exciting to see somebody that I've known for a long time and such a nice guy make it to the quarters. So I just had to throw that in.
No, absolutely. It's fantastic. And I have to say, if you do go to Wimbledon, you have to absolutely do the queue as well. I've done that and it's absolutely brilliant. I think we were there by 7 a.m. and it was great. My grandma's always, she's a massive tennis fan, and she always wanted to go. So we applied for the ballot and she got, I think it was centre court tickets. She always wanted to see Rafa Nadal. She hasn't got there yet. So that's still on her bucket list as well. So it's one.
Okay. Your grandma and I would be really good friends because he's my favorite too. So big fan. So enough of that. Let's jump into Minerva Virtual Academy. I want to really give you the opportunity to share with us what it is you're doing in the UK. But before we get to that, you grew up as an athlete yourself, not a tennis player, a football / for US listeners, a soccer player. And I would love for you to share with us a little bit of that journey, how you got started in sport and how far you took your soccer career and what led you to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I as a young child, really lived around the world quite extensively. So I was actually born in Germany, but very young, I moved to Dubai with my family and after that to Spain. And I sort of found that football was a great way of building new relationships and new friendships, especially when you're always changing schools and trying to meet new people. I sort of used football or soccer, as you call it, as a way to integrate in new countries and meet other people, and found it really great for that. And at one point actually was really good at it as well. So my career sort of took off a little bit. I played in the youth leagues in Spain. And we then moved to the UK when I was around 15 years old. And I signed what we call an apprenticeship agreement, which is, in the UK, we have a certain pathway when you turn 16, where you become a apprentice footballer or soccer player at a club, and you do your education at the same time. So you're almost training in what you would call a professional environment whilst you're still continuing with your education. So on the back of that, I was able to secure a professional contract. I played in the third division in the UK for 3 years. And after that, unfortunately, found my career sort of going the opposite way. And I played in semi-professional football for a number of years until I eventually had quite a bad shoulder injury. My C joints and my shoulder sort of ruptured, so I had to have surgery. And that was then quite difficult. And I got to a point where I sort of thought I had to make a decision whether I continue playing semi-professionally or I focus my career outside of sport. And I decided to do the latter. And actually, we can dive into these experiences a little bit more in the podcast, obviously, but I had some quite difficult periods playing, and I decided to focus my energy on trying to support the younger generation of athletes who are coming through the system, not just in football or soccer, but in all different sports, and using my experiences that I learned from my time as a young footballer to try and help them navigate the pathway and make sure that they don't make the mistakes I do or I did at the time. And that's sort of how I find myself also working in online education now and supporting young athletes specifically with their careers.
Let's dive into that. I'm very curious about what sort of your roadblocks were, what age you were when you hit those various roadblocks, and then what you did to kind of get over the hump and move on to the next step.
Yeah, so when I was playing, so we're talking around over 10 years ago now, more or less. So that's when I was coming through the youth system. And at one point, I was really at the top of my game. I felt really invincible. I would go out on the pitch full of confidence. You know, no one would score, or sometimes they would score, but I was just really, you know, you felt invincible. You know that feeling. And it was really a managerial change. Obviously, this is not so relevant in tennis because you maybe in the sense that you change a coach. Mm. But we experienced a managerial change, and I just didn't have that click with a manager. I was at a point in my career where I had been sort of second choice under an international goalkeeper. So as a young goalkeeper, it was quite challenging to get into the team. And I saw this as an opportunity to actually, we've just had a managerial change. This is a fresh canvas, basically, for me to go and show him what I can do. And unfortunately, that led to me putting so much pressure on myself that it actually had the opposite effect, where I was then going onto the pitch feeling like I had to prove a point to the manager. And it led to real nerves, anxiety, and as a goalkeeper, it's a quite a slippery slope in that it's you're the last line of defense. If you make a mistake, it costs the team dearly. So if you make a mistake, that then really hits your confidence and it can escalate quite quickly. And that's what I found happened to me at that point. And I always link that experience to a time in my life and my career where I was so football focused and I didn't really have many hobbies outside of football that could take my mind off those sort of pressures that I was putting myself on the pitch. So it becomes a all-encompassing 24/7 environment where you're either thinking about your last game, you're thinking about your next training session or the next game. And that's a very tricky and difficult place to be, I think, and a very dangerous place to be. And that's why I always, when I speak to young athletes in general, I'm a big advocate of this, is make sure that you always have either something that is supporting you on the pitch, whether that's education, hobbies, you know, friendships, other relationships who are not just talking to you about your career as well, someone who can take your mind off these things. I think that's so important. And at the time, I didn't really have that, nor was really sports psychology a thing at the time. You know, maybe in America it was a little bit more advanced than the US college system, but in third division football in the UK, it was, no one is really, you, if you went to speak to a sports psychologist, there was something very wrong with you, basically. So it was something that, you know, wasn't really ever discussed at the time. And I never had anyone come to me and say, you know, what's happened? You know, your performances have gone from being absolutely brilliant to now you're really struggling even to catch a ball. And that wasn't there at the time, unfortunately. And that sort of led to me being released from the club. I made the wrong decision in going to another club, unfortunately, where it just wasn't the right environment for me and the club wasn't in a good situation either. And that sort of escalated a little bit. And there were also times there where I sort of reluctantly, my parents had always said, you know, you need to make sure that you are, you know, having a hobby, doing some education, do a degree whilst you're playing. You never know, your career might end at any point. And I was always of the mindset, no, I need to focus on my football. This is what everyone is telling me. The coaches are saying that I have to do this that way. And unfortunately, that was completely the wrong mindset. And as now there is some research out there as well, which sort of promotes that education is something, or a dual career, as they call it, you know, actually helps you perform on the pitch by doing exactly what I mentioned earlier in terms of releasing pressure, distracting you of things that are happening on the field or on the court. And just, yeah, complete release of pressure.
How old were you when you committed 100% to football as opposed to maybe dabbling in other sports and other activities?
So I've always been quite intense on football. I used to play a bit of tennis when I was younger, but I would say probably the age of around 14 is when I really committed to football fully. Prior to that, I was still playing, but it wasn't in the same environment as when I turned 16 and went into a professional environment. And even at 16, I was still doing my education because it's part of the program. It was only when I turned 18 where you then pass doing your high school education, so to speak, where you can then say, actually, I'm not doing anything else. I'm focusing on the football. And that's the wrong mindset, and where I'm a big advocate of the US college system, because in order to go pro, you actually have to go through the university system as well to go mostly into those sort of professional environments. So in the UK and in Europe, it's very much the opposite of that, in that you don't have to go down that university route. And actually, you know, the university route in Europe and the UK is not something that would get you into a professional sporting environment usually.
Right. And I mean, we've heard that multiple times from a variety of folks around the world that, well, in tennis, it's not a requirement, but in many other sports, in the US especially, it is a requirement to go through the college system in order to turn professional. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that there are players, whatever sport it is, that need that additional time to mature physically, to mature mentally, emotionally, and also, as you're saying, to have that kind of you know, side hustle of pursuing education to keep their mind more balanced so that they don't go down the rabbit hole that you found yourself in and that many players of all sports find themselves in, where that pressure is just building constantly and there's no release for it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I were to look back and the things I know now, I'm 29 years old now, that, you know, if I had applied some of those things when I was 18, 19, wow, it would have been possibly a very different story. And it's quite interesting because obviously I speak to a lot of younger athletes now, and there's a lot of differences in the sports as well. I find that very interesting, in that when I speak to the young tennis players at the school, for example, they are mostly very set on their education, whereas other sports are a little bit more like, I'm not so sure, I just do this because I have to. So you come across different personalities and different identities in the different sports. Obviously, there's always, you know, the odd one out, so to speak. But in football, it's very much a mindset that, no, you have to focus on your football career. Education is just something that is, you know, is not really going to help you. It's changing a little bit now, but it's still not quite there where I think sports like tennis are, for example. And I have heard quite extensively, you can probably tell me better than anyone, Lisa, but that a lot of, you know, young players actually also drop out of education at 16 because it just doesn't become, it's not manageable for them, or they think it's not manageable, and they have that mindset, actually, let's focus on tennis alone and see where that takes me. I have heard that more than seen it in the world of tennis as well.
Well, I think that's why we've seen the prevalence of virtual schooling, right? Is especially in the US, the way our junior competitive structure is set up, there are tournaments that will start on a Friday and run, you know, end on a Monday, or there are tournaments that start on a Sunday and run, you know, through the following Sunday. So if you're in traditional school, you're having to miss school, which leads to either getting punished by the school and in terms of not being allowed to make up work and tests and things like that, or even, well, I don't know if it's worse, but equally bad, the parents having to actually lie to the school and the child is sick, you know, over and over and over again. And that's why they're missing school, because that's the only way they're allowed to then make up the work. And it's not a good situation. But, you know, I've shared lots of times the way my family dealt with it with my son who played tennis was we went to the school board and appealed to them to let my son do kind of a combination of taking some classes online and compressing his school day and starting an hour earlier than everybody else and not having a lunch and not having a study hall and just kind of pushing straight through from 7 to noon. And then he was able to be on the tennis court by 12:30, 1 o'clock every day. And it gave him ample time. Though it was still an issue when he was still in the tournament at the end of the draw, you know? So yeah, it's tough, but this is a great segue to kind of talk about Minerva, what Minerva is, why you started it, and why you're involved in this program, why you feel it's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, like you say, it's, we had so many conversations with parents where, you know, they do come to us and they say that, it's just not a manageable process to go to a traditional school anymore. And as you say, that's probably, tennis is probably the most prevalent sport where, it sounds like in the US, it's very similar to in Europe, but you have the Tennis Europe Junior Tour, and, you know, the students or the children are traveling to, you know, countries overseas with flights, and it's taking at times, you don't know, it could take a whole week out of your schedule, or it could be 2 days. It depends on how long you last in the tournament, and the unpredictability of it is also a big challenge. So,
and a stressor. I mean, this is, you know, you're talking about managing stress and pressure. This is an additional piece of that, right? Is, you know, how long am I going to be in the tournament? How much school am I missing? How much is it going to cost my family to be here? Et cetera, et cetera. So sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to throw that out.
No, absolutely. And I mean, some of the children and families that come to us, they attend private schools, and, you know, some are more supportive than others. It depends sometimes on the type of school. But we have in some cases heard that parent at the start, the school is very supportive, and then it gets to the crunch of it, and actually they're not supportive at all when it comes further down the line. So you have different experiences. But in terms of Minerva's Virtual Academy, our founder Hugh founded Minerva Tutors in 2014, which was a homeschooling and tutoring company. So we provide additional support for young students in the UK, in Europe and around the world, for additional support in maths maybe, or English or science, but also complete homeschooling packages and programs. So students that didn't want to learn at a physical school, and parents actually were advocates of homeschooling, we provided the full program and curriculum for them to be able to study from home. And in some cases, we found that those were athletes. Now, when COVID hit, obviously everything went to remote education. Some people had good experiences with it. Some people had very bad experiences because schools were not set up for the speed at which COVID came in, and to all of a sudden be able to deliver education remotely. So Hugh, our CEO, decided to, well, why don't we create something that's a little bit more in the middle, because homeschooling can be quite an expensive service. If, you know, it's one-to-one and there's, you know, so many hours that you need to do in terms of teaching, that can be quite costly. So Hugh decided to do something in the middle. And obviously some online schools already existed at this point. I think in the US, probably more known than in Europe and the UK. I think before COVID, no one had ever heard really of online education in Europe. It's
really?
Yeah, honestly. And I think at university level, yes, absolutely. That was quite common. And I did both my degrees online. But certainly for anything in high school and the lower age groups, it wasn't ever really a thing, to be honest. So Hugh decided to create an online school, which is an affordable medium, basically, between homeschooling and just the normal tutoring here and there. So the school was founded about two and a half years ago. I came on board in, what is it now, a year and a half, God, time flies. And basically, you know, my role was to expand a little bit what we do in the world of sport, and for people to just learn about online schooling and how that can support athletes. We'd for a long time heard that young athletes experience troubles and difficulties managing their education, but there's never really been a solution for that, or anyone who sort of come forward and said, you know, this is something that could maybe help you with that. We do have a accreditation, which is called TAS in the UK. And that basically is the Talented Athlete Scholarship Scheme, which is a commitment of a college, really, so 16 to 18, to say that we are going to be flexible with deadlines and your homework or assignments, and give you leave if you need to go to a tournament. But that's the only thing that's really existed. And there's not, you know, there's maybe 30 or 40 colleges signed up to that, if that, in the whole of the UK. So that creates quite a big issue and a big void. So when I came on board, my goal was obviously, right, first and foremost, what sports is this needed the most? And it quite quickly became apparent that actually tennis, it very much needs virtual schooling for the majority of young players. I was quite fascinated when I found out that at 12, 13 years old already, the young players are, you know, traveling to Europe for maybe 10, 15 tournaments in the year. And that just the traditional school model is not suitable for them. So we worked on building relationships in the world of sport, and tennis and motorsport are actually still the most popular sports and where we have most of our students learning with us. So we created a relationship with Tennis Europe, who organize, I think it's around 400 to 500 events in Europe, from under 12s up to under 16s. And basically that just allowed us to go in and meet parents and say, look, we are here, we exist, and this is how we can support you. And in tennis, it was quite a little bit of an easier message, because actually parents had already maybe known a little bit through the US system that, you know, some kids in the US were maybe, or some players in the US were going towards online and virtual learning, but it hadn't ever really become a thing here. So we'd started those conversations, and we're now at a place where I think we'll have hopefully over 80 athletes come with come September, starting September 2023.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really amazing. And so Minerva is open to students ages
11 to 18.
Okay.
We've just started our middle school, which is for years 7 and 8. So that's about 11 and 12 year olds to 13, mm-hmm. approximately. And then we have our sort of senior school as well, and our sixth form. So that's sort of in the UK or in Europe. The curriculum that we offer is the international GCSEs and international A level. So it's actually quite a global acknowledged curriculum, even though it's UK, but most of the international schools around the world either offer the American system, the IGCSE and the A-level curriculum, or the international baccalaureate curriculum. So it's really a mixture of those three. And we offer the international IGCSEs and the A-levels.
And is it accredited by the NCAA? So can your students then come to the US and attend college and play tennis that way?
Correct. Yeah. So we are only our year 13, which is the last year of high school according to our curriculum. We're launching that this year for the first time. So after that, that's when we'll see a lot of the students going towards America. Most of the tennis players have that in mind when I speak to them initially when they join the school and throughout their time at the school as well. That's most of the goal, or mostly their goal, is to go to the US. And absolutely the international GCSEs and A-levels are accredited by the US colleges. And in fact, because of the level of education is, you could say, a little bit higher. I think in the US it only goes to year 12, if I'm not mistaken, whereas we go to year 13. So some of the credits from the A-levels actually already count towards college credits. Which means they have to take some, I think, less lessons once starting at university, which can also be a good thing in terms of transition and integrating into the system in the first year. If you have a few less lessons, obviously it's a big shock to the system. I know that in America, coaches are very big on athletes being athletes. And I think for some, it can be maybe a bit of a shock to the system in terms of the intensity of the training once you go to an American university. So taking a few less lessons is probably a good thing in the first year.
Yeah, for sure. So walk us through what I would say a typical day, but I think it'd be more helpful to hear what a typical week would look like during your academic year.
Absolutely. So in terms of as an online school goes, we have some competitors, but we're very much focused on pastoral well-being of the students as well.
What do you mean by that?
So compared to some other online schools, you might have very big lessons. Could be 100, could be 200 students, could be up to 1,000 in a lecture-based room learning a math, for example. Our lessons are maximum size of 20, and each student has a mentor as well. So if I just describe the four key pillars of the school, we have live lessons, which are held with teachers, basically in a small Google Classroom environment, where it's basically an engaging lesson with other students. So those happen at maybe 2 to 3 hours of live lessons per day, depending on the year group of the student and the subject that they're studying. At a physical school in Europe, you would probably be there 7 hours in the day. You would be all day from 9 o'clock to about 3 o'clock. So our model is called flipped learning, where it's just a reduced number of hours in the classroom, because we then also have a virtual learning platform, which is a second pillar of the school. And the virtual learning platform is completely flexible, and it's where the students do the self-study element of their work. So if a tennis player, for example, is at a tournament, they might not be able to attend the live lessons, but they do have access to the recording anyways, which is a huge bonus for them. But the other element of the learning is what happens on the virtual learning platform, which they can always do at any time, any point in time throughout the week. So they're really in control of their own schedule. And obviously, each player might have a different schedule in terms of they train at this hour of the day or this point. But they can always work around that with access to the recordings and the virtual learning platform. In terms of pastoral care, what I mean by that, so every student actually has a mentor who they meet for 30 minutes every week. Mm-hmm. And basically that mentor goes through the academic progress of the student. So it's a really good mechanism of support. It's usually either a teacher or someone with an academic background who will go through the student's progress in that week. Have you completed your self-study element? How are you doing in your quizzes? Have you completed your assignments? All that kind of stuff, and look at giving them some feedback as well. But the other element of a mentoring session is actually the pastoral care of the student and making sure that they're feeling well, that they're not stressed because they have a tournament and they haven't submitted last week's homework, for example. So a mentor is there to reassure that student as well, to support them in many different ways. Also, for example, looking at career avenues and pathways. What are your interests? What would you like to study at university level? How can we get you there? How can we complete the personal statements that you need to submit for university, for example? So that really is the role of a mentor. It can be huge, and each student is slightly different. I've mentored a student this year, for example. He joined us really late and he came from a homeschooling background. So he hadn't covered the previous curriculum that we'd done throughout the year. So with him, it was looking at how can we put in a strategy that works around your tennis schedule, the way you can still catch up with what's been delivered already in the year. So that come next year, which is two very important years, year 10 and year 11 in the UK, you have everything that you need to not fall further behind, and actually that you can hit the ground running and make good progress throughout the year. So we looked at how to manage a schedule and catch up work and those sort of things. And then the other thing that we're very passionate about as well is the community aspect of the school. So we have year group assemblies, we have entire school assemblies.
All virtual.
So we talk about very important topics. It could be something environmental, it could be something that's been in the news that week, it could be a particular week, it might be mental health week, for example. So it could be anything that they discuss in the assemblies. We have well-being sessions as well that are put on for the students to come in, where we talk about the importance of mindfulness, physical activity, nutrition, those sort of things, something usually the athletes are quite familiar with already, but again, important things to hone in. And then we have after school clubs where students can get together. We have a young entrepreneurs club, photography, film production, different things. Again, I think this year we'll be running a chess club. So again, interesting aspects and things for the students to get involved with. We have social rooms. We have in-person trips as well at the school. So despite being an online school, we do hold every term, so every 3 months, about 2 to 3 in-person trips where the students actually get together, really cool for them, because they've obviously, it's like when you go to start a new job and you've only met someone virtually and you go into the office for the first time. Really nice thing. So I've been on a school trip as well, and it's really, really brilliant how the students actually, despite sometimes having not met before, actually how well they get on and just sort of build those relationships. And then Sol and I, we also run what we call a high performance club, basically. So this is what's very specific to the young athletes, where Sol and I have been professional athletes. We have been through, as I said at the start, our highs and lows. So we talk to them about the importance of performing under pressure, well-being, the importance of education, time management, really important topics that are important to them. And maybe as a young athlete, you don't quite know that so much and realize, but certainly along the way, something that hopefully they take a lot of insight and tips from us. We're not experts, but we do also bring in, for example, guest speakers. So we previously had a performance psychologist come in and deliver a workshop about normalizing the vocabulary and challenges. So just normalizing the fact that in your career as a tennis player, you will experience up and downs, so that when you actually hit a real low, you know, you almost knew that was coming at some point, and it doesn't hit you as hard as whether you were, you know, if you're on cloud nine and just, oh, this is, like I said at the start, I think, you know, you're feeling invincible and no one can beat you. If you have that mindset and you all of a sudden hit low, it really hits you hard. So just normalizing those aspects around challenges in your career as a young athlete. And we also had another guest speaker come in who works extensively with Formula One drivers. So he did a really cool workshop, again, on performance environments and, you know, tracking your sleep. And for example, if you're traveling over to Australia or other countries, you know, are you managing the jet lag, for example? Are you managing that? And, you know, they have tables for all those things to say, right, this is the time you need to get into bed now, because obviously this is the time difference. And those are not necessarily things that we always think about, but are certainly quite important for achieving high performance. So those are two guest speakers we had in today. Next year, I'm looking at bringing in a former Olympic athlete as well to do a workshop. Just some really cool guest speakers coming in, and you know, the athletes can benefit from that. It's basically a little bit, so to say, my baby, because I want the students to benefit and get as much value out of knowledge from other people who can help them along with their careers. And I think it's important.
Yeah, I love that, Fabian. I think that's such a good idea. And you know, anytime somebody who's been there, done that, can speak to those who are just coming up, I think it's so beneficial. But I want to point out that Minerva isn't just for athletes, right? This is a virtual school that's open to any student that wants this type of academic experience. You have specific people dedicated to working with athletes in specific sports. But for those families who are maybe looking for an educational experience for their children who aren't athletes, as well as their children who are, they could all benefit from Minerva, and it would accommodate all their needs, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think it's important that our athletes are also in lessons with other non-athlete students. Otherwise, it can become quite an all-encompassing or just sports environment, which I think there's great value in. You know, we have different sports at school. We have tennis players, go-karters, Formula 4 drivers, skiers, golfers. They can all learn from the different sports from each other, but it's also important that they have relationships with other students who are not in a sporting environment and who can talk about something different other than sports. Otherwise, as I said at the start, it just becomes very all-encompassing in the 24/7 sport environment, which you don't necessarily want. Hopefully by the end of the year, we're looking at having around 500 students at the school from around 40 different countries around the world. So at the moment, a couple are based in America, mainly because of the time difference in terms of when our live lessons. I think it's around 60-65% are based in the UK, and the others are based in countries around Europe. So a real international school, so to speak. And again, it's really, really cool. And what we found with virtual learning as well is that, you know, a lot of parents and families come to us saying, actually, my child learned a lot better during COVID. They didn't have the distraction of perhaps the classroom, or perhaps they have a special educational need where they don't feel so comfortable in full classroom environment. So there's a lot of different reasons why students and families come to us. In that sense, some families, for example, want to travel around the world. You know, we've had some families hire boats and say, right, my child's coming with us and we're going to travel around the world, and they're doing their school whilst they're on the boat and we're exploring. So
can they adopt me? Can I be part of that family? I want to do that.
That's so brilliant. So it just opens so many different doors, and we've never ever said that virtual learning is for everyone, because some students really need that, you know, that personal interaction in terms of being with their friends at school in person every day. But for certain circumstances, such as the athletes or certain students, as I mentioned, it just works much, much better than the traditional school model, which has been there for so many years and hasn't really changed in that period of time. So
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you talked about when you were talking about what the program looks like, that really jumped out at me just based on my son's virtual learning experience in middle school, is that accountability factor. The fact that they have that one-on-one meeting with their mentor during the week that holds the student accountable for turning in the work, for meeting the deadlines, for attending the classes, you know, I think is really crucial. And it's a piece that's missing from a lot of virtual learning environments. And so kudos to you guys for recognizing the need for that and implementing a system to make sure that these kids are getting the work done. Because one of the things that I've heard over and over again from American kids who have gone through homeschooling or virtual schooling is, you know, they find themselves at age 17 or even 18, they're so far behind. And they want to go on to play in college, but they haven't been able to meet the requirements necessary to be eligible to play college tennis because no one has held them accountable for meeting these deadlines. So I think that's a huge piece of the pie.
Yeah, I think compared to some of our competitors, you know, I was listening today in one of our meetings and one of our competitors has around 6,000 students, whereas we are 500. So, it's still a small community and it's very manageable, and we will never lose. We never want to lose that aspect of, you know, pastoral well-being and one-to-one mentoring for the student, because it's so important for our program. And I think for 14, 15, 16 year olds to say you have to have all the skills in terms of time management, discipline, everything like that is unrealistic. You can't expect to have it all from them. And ultimately what can happen is, you know, for parents sending their children to an online school where there isn't that one-to-one aspect and that mentoring, is basically that, you know, they just get lost and they don't know what to do anymore. And then it's a slippery slope. And ultimately the parents are the ones having to check in on them, which is then an additional workload because they're having to say, have you done this work? Have you done this? Whereas with us, for example, the parents receive a report every 2 weeks as well. So parents are kept informed at all times what's happening. If a student is still, despite the mentoring, not completing any work, then that is obviously escalated to the parents within a very short period of time. And we have faculty at the school where we have a deputy head, a deputy head pastoral, who are there to monitor these things ahead of the academic year. They can ensure that the student doesn't go to that point where then it's insolvable, basically, and they can't be helped anymore because they're that far behind. So it's something that separates us apart, and we're very proud of that as well, and we think it's important. The athletes at the school as well, specifically, they have myself and my colleague Sol as mentors as well. So we will meet them from a sporting point of view around every term. And, you know, we're always available by email anyway. So they can just email us if they want anything. But we're always
email?
There.
I don't think kids email anymore.
this is the next thing. We've created an Instagram account now, which is basically also celebrating the successes of our athletes.
Yeah.
But you'll find it's so much easier to communicate and speak to them that way as well. So we sort of implemented that a little bit, Sol and I, to just say congratulations, well done on this tournament, or celebrating. And yeah, it is easier, but they, you know, it's important that they use email as well, because it's still part of how the teachers get in touch with them. And
I was just kidding, sort of, but not really.
But no, not really. As you say, it's changing. Yeah. It's certainly changing. It will be different probably in 2-3 years' time. We probably won't be using email anymore.
Are you on Threads yet? Have you started your Threads account?
I haven't heard of Threads, to be honest, Lisa.
Oh, see, that is Zuckerberg's new platform to compete with Twitter. So
yes, actually, I think my wife mentioned it the other day.
Yeah.
Yes, she did say, but yeah, I'm a bit behind already, and I'm only 29, so it's not a really good sign.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. For our listeners who are interested in the kind of down and dirty details of Minerva Virtual Academy, Fabian, mm-hmm. can you talk about the price for the academic year? Is it a one-year commitment? How does that piece work?
Yeah, sure. So parents, really, our students can join us mostly at any point in the year. Obviously, the academic year is the best point to start, which would be September, just because, especially also when changing curriculums, we have, you know, families joining from different curriculums. We have to make sure that they're getting the full experience, and obviously they can join at later points in the year and catch up, but that's not an ideal situation, especially in year 11 and in the UK that year 10 and year 11 are sort of joint courses almost, as well as year 12 and 13. So for someone to join halfway through can be very tricky. But in terms of the yearly cost, it's currently £6,950 per year. To join, you can pay annually. If you decide to pay termly, it's £2,650 per term. And I'm trying to.
And that's pounds. Let me just clarify. That's British pounds. Correct. So yeah, yes.
Pounds. Okay. So I don't know what the exchange rate is at the moment, but probably about maybe $8,000 US dollars for the year. And they receive, yeah, pretty much what I've mentioned throughout. I'm just trying to think.
You have information sessions that people can sign up for as well, right? Before committing to join the program.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So the usual process would be that a family would book a discovery call with our admissions team. And usually if I know that they're an athlete and they come from a sporting background, I will join on that as well. So that's if they visit our website, www.minervavirtual.com, they can book a discovery call very easily. And then our admissions team basically talks family through everything, how it works, the costs. We can usually create a trial login as well for the virtual learning platform. So even before committing, families can see and the students can have a look what it's like, see if it's for them. Once a student has joined, we have a grace period as well of 6 weeks. So if someone joins us and within 6 weeks, parents say, actually, this is not for them, or they don't want to do this anymore, then they can leave and the rest of the amount would be refunded minus those 6 weeks, which is a very good thing. Mm-hmm. And then we're also holding basically a open event for athletes specifically. I don't know how quickly this will air, Lisa, but next Monday we're holding one.
Yeah, brilliant. It's airing this week. So yes, this will be timely.
Fantastic. So on the 17th, on the Monday at 12 p.m. GMT, which is maybe for US time zone a little bit
really early. depending on where you are.
Yeah. But we can record that session as well. And we'll be holding another one in August. So I'll bear that in mind as well, that maybe we can do a more of an evening or an afternoon one. So if there are any US families who would like to join, it's obviously at a more convenient time for them. But I can send you the link for that as well. It's on the website under open events, under admissions, I think. So parents can join onto that as well.
Awesome. And we'll have the links to all of that in the show notes on parentingaces.com. I think this is so interesting. Are there admission requirements, specific, you know, academic admission requirements, such as for kids that are applying to US universities? Or is it basically, you know, if you want to do this and you can pay, then you're admitted into the program?
Yeah, so it's not really like that, because as a school, it's still important that, you know, that we set the students up to do well, so to speak. So we will look at previous report cards. We will look at the system, the academic system that they've come through previously, and just make sure that if they're going to, for example, year 9 or year 10 with us, that that student has that ability to go into that year group. Otherwise, we will make sure that we say to the family, we don't advise this. This is probably going to be a little bit too difficult for the student, especially let's just say that they're also a tennis player. Mm-hmm. We don't think that's the right thing to do. So we very much do have restrictions is the wrong word, but some, you know, requirements and things that we will look at beforehand before admitting a student. For the sort of last 2 years of high school, year 12 and year 13, we usually ask that the student has at least a grade 6. So in our system, it's from 1 to 9, 9 being the highest, 4 being a pass, so that they have a grade 6 to be able to go onto that course in a subject that they've studied or a similar subject that they've studied previously in GCSE or in their curriculum.
Is there an interview process as well, or is the application process all just forms filled out online?
Yeah, it's usually forms. We do have a baseline test, which is not something the student usually has to study for, but it's just, again, to give us an idea in terms of their current level. Mm-hmm. What we do as well, and we have at the school in our live lessons, we have different sets. So some sets are for the more able students in that year group, some sets are for those who need a little bit more support. So based on those baseline tests, their grades, we'll make sure to try and put that student into the correct set as well in that year group. But yeah, usually it's done through the report card, speaking to the family and understanding the student's history, but there's no real interview process behind it.
Got it. Anything I've forgotten to ask you that we need to discuss?
Try and think. No, I don't think so. I think we've covered most of it. We mentioned that we'll have around 80 athletes at the school, and it's a really nice community. So what we found so far is that for the tennis players who are with us, it's working really, really well, and they're enjoying it as well. And, you know, as a school, as I said, our commitment is to be flexible with the students. So if they're not able to attend live lessons because of a tournament, we still ask that they let us know and notify us that they won't be there. But obviously still ask them to watch the recordings, and we keep that process very much under review all the time to ensure that we don't have students who are attending 0% of the lessons. Yeah. It's important, and that's obviously what the mentor is there for as well. But I think we've covered everything, Lisa. Obviously, if anyone has any questions or has listened to the podcast and wants to learn more or has anything specifically, I'll pass on my email address and they can email me as well.
Perfect. And again, that will be in the show notes on parentingaces.com. Fabian, one last thing I did think of before I let you go, because we are nearing the end of our hour, is you mentioned that a lot of your students are playing their sport with the idea of coming to the States and playing in college. Do you guys provide recruiting assistance? Do you work with any kind of advisors that mm-hmm. help the students find their place in the American colleges?
Yeah, so the answer is no, in that we don't work with anyone directly, primarily because I haven't yet found the best organization to work with. So if you know anyone who is very trustworthy and, you know, will provide a great service on US college recruiting, then by all means, please pass on the details. But
yeah, we'll discuss that offline when we're done.
Yeah, absolutely. But obviously my colleague Sol, he played US college basketball. So we have experience in the process. The main factor is always understanding the academic timeline of the student is obviously very important, and the core courses that they meet that those requirements through the NCAA. So that's a process that has to start quite early once they join us already. But we would like to work with someone who is an expert basically in that field, because it's you'll probably know it's a bit of a minefield, and especially for overseas students. Where it's a different curriculum and a different educational system, it can sometimes become a little bit more complex than you would like. So, we can help and we provide support and personal advice. But in terms of working with someone, we're still looking at trying to find the right company to fit in with us.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I've got some names to share with you. So
wonderful.
All right. Fabian Spies, I have taken enough of your time. Thank you so much for chatting with us, for sharing Minerva Virtual Academy with our audience, and for taking the time to share your story as well, because even though your story is football related, it is youth athlete related. And I think, as you said many times, there are a lot of crossovers between sports, and it's good, I think, to be reminded that we're not so special in the tennis world. We are all part of the youth sports movement, and we all need to work together to support our athletes and help them have the best experience and more importantly, to ensure that we as parents maintain that positive relationship with our children as they go through this. And having a great academic option is one piece of that puzzle. So really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lisa. I think just to add to what you said there, I think it's so important that we maintain a real holistic identity around who we are as people and not just athletes as well for tennis players or whatever sport you're competing in. You're always a person first and foremost, and sometimes that does get lost. We could probably do another whole podcast on something around that. But it's what Sol and I, we're big advocates of that, and we think it's so important that at MBA that, you know, despite these young students being athletes as well, and, you know, perhaps they'll go on to play professional or college, whatever, that they, you know, they're rounded individuals as well in other aspects of their life, and that they could attain the skills that they need from a good education. And that's really so important. So thank you for letting me share my story, telling everyone about Minerva and what we do. And it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you to my audience. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast, for tennis parents by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.